So, it's 301. I think we're at, are we at Forum? I think we are.
Yeah, we are at Forum. And I think actually, so what happened last meeting was there weren't no nominated co-chairs, but I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, Lee Jewell offered to facilitate this meeting correctly. Oh, maybe they're still joining. But I think, Mark, was that correct? Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So I'll give Lee a minute.
Okay.
Mark, would you still like me to, do I still keep notes and report to the steering committee as per a co-chair of this meeting, or how does that work now?
Well, because there are no co-chairs of this committee as of yet, the report can happen from anyone who was in this meeting, including staff. So you can certainly take notes if you like. Otherwise, anyone else can report back who was at that meeting, including support staff. Makes sense? It's no longer your responsibility, in other words. However, if you're at that meeting and there was no other community engagement folks at that meeting, we'll probably ask if you want to. If you don't, we will.
Yeah.
So, Lee, whenever you're ready to start the show.
Sure. So why don't we start out with a roll call? Tell us who you are. Who wants to start?
I'll start because I started with a big mouth,
Mark Mulmar,
and
Council Staff.
Mark. Derek Mapp, council member.
Thank you, Derek. Next.
Ed Chitty, council member.
Laura
Thanks, Ed.
Thomas, council member.
Thanks, Laura.
Sullivan, council co-chair.
Thank you. Stephen, why don't you say hello?
Stephen Spout on the HMAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Thank you. Hi, Thomas.
Hey there, Thomas Noble, grab my co-chair. I have a hard stop at four, so just if I pop out, we're still running, just for folks to know.
Thanks so much. And Kara.
Kara, council staff.
And Mark.
Yeah.
And Lee Jewell, council member. So, Kara, could you please pull up the agenda?
Can everyone see that?
I can't see it yet.
Oh, not yet?
I
My
can.
computer's slow. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
There it goes. Thank you so much.
Okay.
So, is there any objection to approving the draft agenda as outlined? You're not hearing any. It is approved. Any objection to approving the draft minutes? Not hearing any. The draft minutes are approved. Are there any announcements?
Just that I also have a hard stop, along with Tom.
Okay, thank you. And I can't see the agenda yet still.
Was everyone else able to see the agenda?
And I saw it, but as soon as someone speaks, it goes away.
Oh. Steven said yes. Thomas, were you able to see it? No?
It's going away as soon as someone speaks.
Oh, okay. I can put it up really quickly again.
Was fine by me when people were speaking.
There, great. Thank you. So there's no public present. Let's start with our HCAP report.
Sure thing. So I sent this out to council staff earlier today. As usual, I will highlight a couple of cases that I thought might be helpful just to highlight, and then I'll make myself available for questions or discussion on anything else. So The first is on the first page. It's 2023-63. I wanted to point this out because I thought it illustrated a great example of how the system can support folks using specialized care and using specialty clinics. This was a client who had some trouble. They were experiencing a lot of instabilities, including homelessness, and having clinics that allowed them to stop in, to drop in, was a really critical factor in them getting connected to other services, eventually got housing. And then, as they got more stable, and they started kind of getting more in touch with their body and noticing some of the other health issues that they had to address, they kind of grew out of that clinic. They weren't able, specialty appointments and referrals to specialists became more of a challenge through that clinic, just because the clinic is designed to support people who are experiencing houselessness or who, drop in is a better methodology for them. So not only did we, kind of support the client with mediating and getting some interim support, but we were also able to look for alternative service providers. In this instance, found one that was a really good fit for the client. I accompanied the client on a tour of the clinic. We discussed barriers, and now they are connected to, a specialty clinic where they can not only obtain the specialty care that they need, but there's also a really strong community of folks for them. And I'm really happy that we have this kind of like tiered approach that we can access. And I thought this was a great example of success in that regard, because this client is really doing well now. And from a place that was very unstable only a couple of years ago. The second case I'll highlight is on page two. It is 2023-70. 2024-01. So this case is relatively new. It was a connection to a specialty clinic. But I thought it was illustrative, basically, of kind of the interplay between HCAP and legal services. This is a client who, is experiencing housing insecurity, is currently defending an eviction. And connection to care is going to be a critical resource for the defense of the eviction, right? We're going to need to get reasonable accommodations at times. We're going to make sure that the client, we're going to need to make sure that we have some ammunition to throw at opposing counsel. If they come back and they say the client, has behavioral issues, we'll be able to say, we want to be able to say, well, we're working on that. The client is engaging with care, has mental health support, is getting medication, is engaging with the system, right? And those are all things that are going to be very helpful for a case if it comes down to, an ex parte hearing or if it comes down to a settlement conference. And so I just wanted to, again, kind of point out this, what is more or less a small success story, but we kind of have to celebrate those small successes. There are other couple of issues here, but right now I'm in the middle of drafting the grievances, so there's not a whole lot to discuss other than those issues. So I'll just leave it up for questions or if there's any further discussion that folks want to have.
Doesn't look like there's anybody who has a comment. Just double checking. Anybody else want to make a comment? Okay, not. Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, oh, just thank you, Stephen. I just appreciate your work.
Well, thank you. I really do. I mean, it's really cool to see the service providers meeting folks where they are, and moving with them, because it does seem like everybody wants to see folks get better and actually thrive as opposed to just saying,
Yeah, it's nice to see people kind of moving through the system the way it's intended, right? Like starting with the lowest threshold and then sort of making their way into more intensive services. Like that's how people are supposed to move through it is nice when that's working, right? That we have different levels of service to meet people at different points in their journey.
Absolutely. And I will say, you know, to that point, you know, that low barrier entry is a really critical one. And we know that none of this is a linear process. Somebody might make some really big strides and then something could happen and they could get set back and they might continue to need those services. But, you know, when they're at the point where they're self-aware enough to know that they're not getting what they need from a clinic, and they also know enough to contact me for that support, I mean, that's a real recipe for success, it seems like. So I was really happy. It was uplifting to see the client connected to this, the level of care that they're at right now. It was a rare happy meeting for me.
I can imagine. I was invited to speak at a town hall in San Diego, and they talked about their EMA and how challenging it is to access services. So I too want to thank you, along with Laura, with your service. I mean, it's so important that people have a way and an avenue to find redress and work out their concerns through someone like you. So thank you. Any other questions, comments?
So Richard's hand up.
Oh, Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, so Stephen, thank you. And along the lines of advocacy and helping those who can't really help themselves maybe at a particular time, yesterday, March 5th, was a lot of things. 5 years since I was released from custody, 3 years since I signed my lease. And by the way, I reached out to Irma Parada yesterday because Irma was like beyond instrumental in getting my housing, like really long term. And Irma's doing well, but it was important that I thank her. I wouldn't got this without her. But I was going through paperwork yesterday, Stephen, and group. And back in 2017, I was at the height of my relapse. This is way before my, and I was part of AHP, but loosely. Irma had set me up with counseling. Everyone was at their wit's end with me. And so I was looking through a letter and I wanted out of my building. And I was like spun out on speed. There was legitimate traumas going on with me, substance use disorder, grief issues about my son. And basically I was spun out. But like to get movement in the system, you needed an endorsement letter from a psych social worker and a medical provider. So a gentleman named Rodrigo Avila from AHP wrote a psych social letter from me, and Dr. Kelly Egan wrote the medical one for me to turn into shelter plus care, and then they decide. Those letters were instrumental some years later in getting my movement. And I looked at one of them yesterday, and it was really humbling to read what this guy wrote about me. It was all on the money, but the state I was in at the time, psychotic and delusional, decompressing, all that. And I was like, wow, look at this letter. And Dr. Egan kind of wrote the same one on a medical one. But without those, you don't get your foot in the system. You need two of those to even be considered for the move within the housing theater, and it ended up working. So long story, just thank you for everyone that does advocacy like that, because I didn't realize how far gone I was at that point until I read this letter and the people that must have sat with me and wrote these. I remember it a little, but wow, what a job that is. And it all worked out. So sometimes these two things do come true. Thank you, everyone that does advocacy, for those who, for whatever reason at the time, are unable to help themselves.
Well, thank you for that, Richard. I mean, two things come to mind for me. One is you're a real example of someone who can really turn their life around, and doing it through a navigation system that can be really challenging. So, and like you said, we all need advocates on our side to help us out. So thank you for that.
If I could add, I just want to say something as well. Richard, long story short, your story reminds me again of how important it is to hear those stories. As someone who provides services, there are time and time again, a bunch of folks, I will speak from my side, but I know I've heard this story before, where people, where you just get the feeling like this is just where it's at. There's no, we don't know if this person will ever be able to be more than what they are at any, at a low stage. And it's a wonderful reminder that given the support and continued support, despite what we might see, that there is still this wonderful human being in the mess of it all, and that we need to bring to bear all that we can to make certain that people reach whatever level that they can achieve, and not just to give up on people. It is really wonderful to hear your story and the struggle that you've had and what you've overcome and what you continue to work at. Yeah. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Derek. You know, what you guys do, Stephen, and people like Laura and everyone we're talking about, this is a letter to Shelter Plus Care from May 18th of 2018, and the language that was needed. And remember, I'm just spun out a lot of this, but they have to word it, and it's legitimate. And Richard Sullivan is currently residing at 217 Franciscan Towers apartment, blah, blah, blah. Intensive case management here at UCSF Alliance Health Project. Mr. Sullivan is HIV positive, diagnosed with major depressive disorder and PTSD. Client has experienced traumatic events in his life, including familial loss and assaults in the Tenderloin neighborhood. Most recently, as of July 2017, emergency room visit. Client is currently experiencing threats and engaging in violence with individuals and neighbors in the community. Due to these environmental pressures, Mr. Sullivan's mental health systems are severely exacerbated. Client on a day-to-day basis has difficulty sleeping, awakes from night terrors, perpetually in a state of anxiety and panic that intensifies his PTSD symptoms. These factors also affect client's ability to attend and engage in intensive case management services. Additionally, client also has weakened heart and suffers from congestive heart failure. His mental health systems are actively affecting his physical health. Per above issues, client is in need of emergency house swap within the Shelter Plus Care housing portfolio. Mr. Sullivan is unable to live under these conditions and will continue to decompensate if a housing intervention is not accomplished. It goes on, but wow. So that's what people do for each other.
Yeah, Richard, I always appreciate hearing your lived experience. I don't want to take up too much time, but, you know, honestly, like, it does bear mentioning, though. I've had this conversation with a colleague of mine. We kind of umbrella everything under behavioral health. I find that term inadequate, like this notion that, you know, everything will be better if people just behave themselves while their brains are telling them to hurt themselves. It's just an inadequate term. And so I think, you know, even though it's the one that we just use in our, because that's what the department is called, it, you know, I think it is really important to understand it's important to stick with people through those rough times. And, you know, if, you know, there might be a year or two, Richard, where you might not have wanted to go see any of those people, you know, but you came back because they were there and because they met you where you were at that time. And, you know, you're doing the same for people now. So I really appreciate that.
Is there anybody else who would like to comment?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I am so happy that you are where you are now, Richard. And it's, you know, it's stories like these that make me so angry that, I don't know, like, I'm very mindful of, like, Proposition F that just passed. And I feel like people in San Francisco just want to throw people away when they don't like how they're acting. And they just want to make them disappear and want them to go away. And stories like yours is why we hold on to people, you know, like why we make space for people and hold on to hope for people who aren't necessarily holding on to hope for themselves, you know. This is why we don't, you know, like everyone has the capacity to change their life in all sorts of different ways. And we just need to make sure that we are providing people with what they want when they want it to be able to make these kinds of changes. So it's, it's part of why it makes me so angry with the approaches that are just like lock people up or put them away or make them go away or I don't want to see them, you know. It's still, you know, it's still a human being. It's still a person who has the potential always, you know.
Yeah. Punitive, right? Those never really work. Any other comments?
I just wanted to say thank you for sharing. And I heard Stephen use the term success limited few, and building on those few successes that we do have to keep hope and keep the things going. My concern is if we had more people and more programs, more staffing, how many more people could reach the point of where Richard is now?
Good point. Thank you, Ed. Is there anybody else who would like to comment?
So Richard, I do appreciate you putting the energy into the space and the folks sharing. And I kind of personally try to figure out my own journey with regards to my own stigmas and frustrations and things along those lines. And I do struggle a little bit about being a success. And I really want to almost view the person that was in that letter as a success as well, if that makes sense, and value that person in the letter as much as I value the person that I know now. So I think people often will view the process as like what Laura was saying, it's like, I'm gonna toss them away. It's like, no, why don't we just hug them in the state that they're in and call that a day. So that's my own. So I appreciate you sharing, and it's pushing me to grow and to look at my own kind of stuff. So, and I think that's what this work does for me. And I value having you in my circles and in my networks. And I'll stop there.
Thank you, Thomas. Anyone else want to comment? So, I hope, Richard, that you're hearing all this and taking all in. And we can move on to agenda item number 7, the co-chair elections. And we're going to have a vote here. I have a question, though, first. Kira, can you tell me, are there any committee members not in attendance today?
Yeah, I can check that really quick. We have Gwen Smith, who is on an LOA. And then
Think we're going to move her back to membership since we have some new members coming on. We can try to move this committee. She can go back to having her original choice.
And then and then we have Juba, who is absent, and then Paul Harkin, who is also absent.
Okay, so a couple of things are coming up for me. One, I've been doing some inquiries, and Derek said he would be willing to step up and be a co-chair, so I want to nominate him. And unless we hear any more people that want to step up, I'm going to recommend after we elect Derek that we also hold this vote next time and see if we can get another co-chair to step up. And I would ask that the admin send out an email to the committee members letting them know that we're interested in having another co-chair, and we'll have an election to that effect the next meeting.
Okay, so a few things there. So first of all, I don't think we need to send an email out because everyone is here. literally everyone is here except for Paul. Juba, we don't actually know where Juba is.
Oh.
Because Forrest, unfortunately, their agency closed down. We don't have any other contact. It's no longer on this.
Sorry, Mark, you broke up.
So hope that makes sense.
You broke up.
Oh, okay, well, sorry about that.
Juba's still around. I mean, I think Juba's actually in Chicago at the moment. But Juba's definitely still around. You mean you don't have another email address for
him? No, and if you do, can you send that to us, Laura?
I see him on Facebook. Let me see what I can, what else I have.
Okay, great. Is there a second to Lee's motion for Derek?
Second.
Second.
Derek, do you agree to the?
Sure.
All right.
Sorry, sure.
Any, looks like Richard has his hand up.
Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, I hate to confuse the group again, but like maybe I overreacted. I'm here for all these groups, and it really isn't that much for me to continue if people wouldn't mind. I would be honored to be the co-chair again with Derek.
Is there a person
who has to go through all these scripts? It's not hard to do.
So just let me just ask, are you sure that that's what you want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm part of this group. I might have just been in a bad homework day. I have time to do this. It's not hard. So okay. I would like to do this again.
Thank you for that. Go ahead.
Is there a second for Richard's self-nomination? Ed.
Right here. Now look how quick Ed seconded that. I
okay. No. any opposed to electing Richard or Derek as renewed co-chairs? And done. Congratulations.
Thank you, Richard and Derek. I look forward to you taking over the meeting next month. So our next agenda item is number 8, the needs assessment COLA update.
Yeah, I can take this.
Thank you.
So in terms of needs assessment, we voted on a target group, which was Black African American. And so now we get to start the outreach for that. But before that, I wanted to bring the survey that we typically, there's two parts to when we conduct interviews and focus groups. And so one part of that is the survey. And so I wanted to bring that to the group to see if anyone had any changes that they wanted to make or updates that they wanted to make to any of the questions. So I'll go ahead and share that right now. All right, I can't see anyone, but can everyone see this?
Yes.
All right, perfect. So this is our needs assessment. And so this blurb here just explains what we're doing and what folks get upon the completion of the survey. So I'll go through this a little quickly, but if there's a question that sticks out or that someone wants me to go back to, just let me know. So these are more demographic questions. So age, gender identity, sexual orientation, how long they've been living with HIV. And I'll just keep scrolling. There's a total of 29 questions, so just under 30.
What kind of, what should we be looking for, by the way? Just
what was that?
What should we be looking for?
Just if any of these questions need to, the wording needs to be changed, or you feel that they should be updated in any form.
And is it self-administered, or is it
the survey itself?
Yeah.
No, so we actually we hand these out during our focus groups, and we sit with people when we do one-on-one interviews. So it's typically if I'm doing like an interview over the phone, I'll read the questions to folks. So if anyone ever has a question, we're always present to answer or clarify anything.
Okay, got it. I was just seeing virally suppressed, and I was just like, I just wasn't sure about the reading level.
So
you've done a lot of virally undetectable I think if you've got experience, you probably know what would catch people more than I would.
That's a pretty common conversation, I think, between folks who are positive and their primary.
Sounds good. Thank you. It's more like words that I struggle with personally, so.
And that brings us to the end.
The only thing I saw that was homeless versus unhoused. I don't know if the terminology of the community members is.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to push back on that a little bit.
That
terminology seems to mainly be used by, I'd say, a number of service providers and certainly by government, but that terminology isn't necessarily used by the actual individuals in question.
That was my question, Mark. So, okay, I will. What's the response when you respond to them? You give in to the pushback?
Yeah, I know. I noticed that too. That's a good point, Thomas. But like, as you know, the reason I'm in these groups, I just yeah, I noticed unhoused is used a lot, like politically correct language, and you know, we've used that among ourselves, but. For myself, when I was homeless and others that I know, the word homeless really isn't an insult. We just, it's acceptable. And that's like what we are. We were homeless.
Yeah, it's I'd say there's a good parallel, even though they're totally different concepts, to use of the word Latinx with many folks who identify as Latino.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying we shouldn't use words like unhoused or Latinx. You know, words change, language evolves. But I think if we're going to be client-centered, we should be using the terminology that folks themselves will often use. I mean, it's same in the cancer world with survivorship. There's a lot of pushback now on even using the word survivor, but many cancer survivors themselves use that word. So I think in the end, like, we have to really be flexible in our use of words, even words that have shifted in their use by government, education, CBOs. I am curious, though. There is only one target. Can you go all the way to the end, Kira?
Yeah.
There looks like there's only one question that might be considered as particularly targeting the Black/African-American population. Are there additional questions that you all feel should be added to this that would specifically call out, not really call out, encourage conversation about challenges that people might have specifically around their race or ethnicity? And also, Kira, this seems like a lot less questions. If you edited this down, then kudos.
Derek, I'm wondering if you want to handle that question. Do you have a comment or some insight on that?
Not really. As I see the two questions, the thing that comes to mind is I think folks may see this as 28 and 29 as the same sort of question as twice. The only other thing that I am experiencing with this question is how people might, some folks, I should say, might not be able to separate what's race from what's gender or gender identity or sexual orientation. Sometimes those things kind of get all mixed up together.
Do you think they should be named?
Yeah. So Derek, how about we rephrase that question? So if yes, was that negative experience related to your race? Question mark. Second sentence. If not, what did you perceive that what did you perceive to be the focus? And then you could add in a parenthetical, sexual orientation, gender
identity.
Gender identity, etc.
How does that sound? Are you interested in the question about whether they're experiencing? I guess I'm curious. Why not just ask the question? Have you experienced stigmatizing? Have you had any stigmatizing experience as a result of your
race,
blackness, or African Americanness?
Well, that's the first part of the. That's the first part of the question. Is specifically asking that. Right, related to your race. At the same time, we don't want to shut it off. Like if they want to say no, we don't want to give them the message that like, okay, well then we don't want to hear about it. But that first sentence is specifically related to your race.
Okay.
Well, I think it's also just the idea that often some of these events come as a multiple. Like it's not just because I was black, but this. But I was also called a faggot, or you know what I mean? Like,
intersectional harm. Absolutely.
Right.
Looks like Richard has their hand up.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, I want to practice cultural humility here. I'm glad Derek took the lead first. But if this is an African American needs assessment, I don't think the word race is out of line there. And, because there is systemic barriers and that have been built in and specifically for race, and it gives them a chance. And then since this is one-on-one, you can have discussion about their answer. If someone's being overboard about it, I mean, the interviewers can sense that and talk to them and ask them open-ended questions. You know what I mean? I don't think there'll be too many over-complainers. They'll probably answer this correctly and honestly, but race is important here. And I think the second follow-up, I think it's well worded, but like maybe something like, if not race, what other, you know, because then there are other issues that may be systemic barriers, like your sexual orientation, gender identity. I understand. So this looks like a well-rounded question. I mean, this is African-American focus, and this is something to do with race. And also the follow-up, there may be, if not race, you know, however you want to word that, have you run into other barriers based on blah, 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 blah? And, you know, some people might grab at that and embellish, but I'm sure not. You can, the interviewers can deal with that on the spot.
Kira, maybe change that second sentence to say, if not, comma, what did?
But what if it was not just race, like Derek was kind of saying, like, what if it is a couple of things that they experience all intertwined?
No, you first, please.
Oh, I was just wondering if maybe then I should take out this first part and just leave it kind of more general. What did you perceive the focus to be?
Well, I mean, I agree with Richard, though, in that we actually do want to call out race. So I think in responding to Maria, I think that's more for you and whoever is helping you with this in the interview itself, is being able to like have that follow-up conversation if they're related to their race and or, you know, intersectional harm, the potential. Like it shouldn't just be like, okay, so tell me about how that, like how, you know, someone was racist against you. It's more like have a conversation about like what was that negative experience. And I think it'll come out as long as the interviewer is prepared to be able to like explore something that might not be monofocused on race. But we do want to tease out, of course, like if something was monofocused on race, because also as Richard said, like there are definitely systemic issues related to Black/African-American people. But as Maria said, a lot of times, and you know, and other folks, you know, there's an intersectional stance, a slant to that as well. So as long as, let's say, the interviewer is, I think, I don't know, broad enough, sophisticated enough in their perspective on how a harm or solely based on an attribute or on multiple attributes, then I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a, you know, and or kind of situation. Like, we want to be open and sort of curious about what sort of, yeah, what are the barriers that people are experiencing. I think it's totally fair to explicitly name race, since we're, that's the target of this particular survey, and keep it open for either intersectional harms or other harms to show up as well.
Do you feel comfortable with that, Kira, since you'll be the lead interviewer?
Yeah, I also want to highlight that this is just one aspect of the whole interview that and discussion that we have. So we also do have additional questions, and we usually look back through some of the surveys, this being one of the key questions that we'll probably be looking back at to see what to maybe expand more with folks.
Great.
When we're having these discussions.
If I could, I know that this this potentially could add more complexity to it. Actually, it definitely will. I wonder if we could add a question around the service category that folks are may be experiencing the most stigmatizing experience. And the reason why I ask that is it may not be coming from all quarters, or there may be a specific area that they're having difficulty in. And so being able to identify those difficulty, that difficult area, maybe there's some way that we can find to address it or ask them about addressing it.
Yeah, I think that's great. I don't think it's a new question. I think you actually add a third question to 29. And much like with the prior conversation, I'd say that the interviewer will have to be in some ways careful about the conversation, because you won't be reporting back that an agency did this. You'll be reporting back about a service category. And so, you know, they might want to talk on and on about how, in particular, say, I don't know, Shanti did this, Shanti did that. So you'll just have to, when you report back, say that it was experienced by a provider of psychosocial support and medical case management, if that makes sense, Kira. I think the question could...
So Stephen, Stephen added in the comment, perhaps ask number 28, then 29, have you experienced any stigma?
Well, sorry, let me clarify, because I think the numbers changed as I was looking at it. But what I was suggesting, and then I actually had a quick statement again too, but what I was saying was, you know, in the past 12 months, have you had any negative or stigmatizing experience as a result of identifying as Black or African American? Then another question, have you experienced any negative or stigmatized experience? Give them the opportunity, right? Because then we can separate whether it's, you know, whether it's a result of their identity as a Black or African American, or whether it's they have some overall sense of stigmatization, but aren't quite sure, we can't necessarily place it with that. Maybe it's there's an intersectionality issue. I also do think there might be, and I forgive me because we scrolled through the document pretty quickly, but I do wonder, and this is kind of something that came up in a case that I'm working on, but I do kind of wonder whether or not there's an opportunity or a way to explore whether or not these experiences by these folks is one they would attribute to a single person or systemic. Because I do have, you know, for example, I had a client who came to me with this problem. He was like, you know, there's no point in me filing a grievance, because no matter how many times I say it, this person is never going to understand that what I'm experiencing is a result of systemic racism. And you know, yeah, they have helped me. They have helped me, and I don't necessarily feel, but they don't realize that the way they're talking to me and the challenges that I'm facing are a result of some systemic issue that I have that they don't. And that's real. And I think that's worth exploring. And I do wonder whether it's an important question to ask of the folks, you know, of the respondents in this instance.
That is going to be a tough one to tease out. That, I mean, I like that first idea a lot, just changing 28 to say, have you had a negative or stigmatizing experience with a service provider due to your race or ethnicity? But that second one is going to be tough, because how do you have a conversation about one person within a needs assessment? Like, that just seems like you're not going to, that's not going to, I mean, it's not going to be helpful, I think, for the client, of course, but I don't know if that would be helpful for as a part of a data set. You know, that seems tough. Well, and, I mean, I also would say that, like, yeah, there might be someone who has sus opinions around race that are informing how they are treating a client, but that individual experience, like, is a systemic issue, right? Because they would have been trained by an agency. They're at an agency that clearly has not done due diligence with this particular individual. You know, I mean, I think obviously there are bad apples, but at the same time, like, within the system of care, that's the system of care also losing its ability to self-regulate. Does
that make sense? Yeah, I guess from my mind, and I don't disagree. I guess where I'm just to try and explain my brain a little bit more, I was trying to think, you know, as far as a needs assessment is concerned, presumably the needs assessment drives some sort of action or solution to the need. The answer to that question determines whether or not it is an individual experience that they're having with somebody who needs specific training, or an experience that requires more education for the community about systemic racism, right? Is it somebody that needs cultural sensitivity training, or is it somebody that needs to understand what doesn't know what systemic racism or needs that explained to them, you know? And those are their two different solutions to different problems. That's the only, but I understand it may be difficult, you know, acuity wise, you know, I see the barriers, I see the challenges. I didn't think it was worth mentioning.
Yeah, I get it. But also we have to keep in mind what this project is. It is literally a needs assessment. And so we're supposed to be portraying patterns. So there's no solutions or even any interventions necessarily built in to this activity. There are recommendations at the end of it, but they're recommendations based on what patterns have we seen. Like, so if a lot of people have had stigmatizing experiences specifically around race, we can make a recommendation about, you know what, we need to train up our providers for sure. If people have had stigmatizing experiences, in particular at an agency that gives legal advice or food, then we can make a more targeted recommendation. But as far as an individual having an individual experience, like, we're not actually going to be able to help them, let alone help them with a particular staff person. I mean, I hope that doesn't sound cold. This is like a needs assessment, not, you know, not a mediation in some ways.
I understand.
Are there any other questions or concerns or edits anyone would like to add?
So I don't want to just check in with Kira. How do you feel about shifting that last, per Stephen's suggestions, that second to last question to read, have you had a negative or stigmatizing experience with a service provider based on your race or ethnicity? I mean, that's a tough one, because it's asking someone to make a determination of where that harm came from, right? Because if it was just a feeling that they had, then they can share that feeling, but that's not going to link to a specific thing, because unless someone specifically, the person sort of who might have given the harm, unless they specifically said, I'm saying this to you because you as a Black person are like this, It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of guesswork, perhaps, on the part of the client, which is a bit unfair, I think, to the client to have to make that assumption. But, you know, you all have done client work. You know that clients have definitely, like, opinions and experiences around not just race, but race, gender, class, that they feel like they might have experienced as service providers. So I don't think that will limit the like their ability to actually respond. But, you know, it's just something to consider that it might, that it's a lot to ask someone to be able to guess if the challenge they're experiencing is due to a factor that person is probably not going to be sharing, like, I'm doing this because of that. Anyway, I'm rambling. How does that sound to you, Kira?
That sounds good. So then I would need to change this one as well.
Yeah, because we don't want to leave them hanging, even though this, the other ones are not about race. It's still, you know, that's still interesting data to collect. So if no, so it's basically like, if no, comma, what did you perceive to be the focus? Or if not. And then, of course, like, when you're conducting these interviews, don't just, well, you know what? You might want to even leave, like, an additional box in there. So if they want to talk about, rather than just have a yes or no for 28, you know, if they want to explore that. Yeah, and then so you just add on, like, if yes, please describe. How's that? So it wouldn't be the other, it would just be an additional text box. There we go.
Okay.
Thank you, Kim.
I think elaborate might, I don't know if that's too much of a, like, well, what do you mean by elaborate? How about just is describe okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so with that, you know, you can see, like, that if yes is actually a third bullet point. So you might want to play around with that. You don't need to do it now, so that it's just a text box rather than, like, a third choice, you know?
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, hearing nothing else, I'll stop sharing my screen.
Thanks, Kira. And thank you, everybody. Is there anybody else who wants to comment? Okay, that was our last agenda item. Is there anything else anybody wants to add before we end? No announcements, anything, Mark? No? Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate you being here, and we'll look forward to seeing you next month with your new / old reoccurring chairs, co-chairs. See you then.
Well, it was not old, but
thanks, everyone.
Regenerated, yeah. Okay, regenerated.
Peace, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Take care.
Kira, did you get what